Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. Commercial real estate with no stone left unturned.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the RAND CRE Show. I'm your host, Mike Taravella. And today, I have an distinguished colleague, a partner of mine. I have Greg Scully. Greg has participated in over 300 units. He has been a great partner of mine and the RAND team for two deals. And I really respect his cheery disposition when it comes to the frothiness of the commercial real estate market. So, Greg, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. Trying to keep my energy up. I'm doing good. What's up?
Just living the dream one day at a time. Excited for
I was just doing a spreadsheet.
I love Greg. For those who don't know, Greg is not this cheery all the time. So this is the sarcasm that he brings to the table every day. So, but Greg, I appreciate, you know, obviously all jokes aside, we liked partnering with you. Two deals now. I think you provide a different perspective in the sense of the cheery optimism. It only goes up. If you buy now, it only goes up. Obviously, you have experience under your belt, but you've kind of seen a lot of different things. Versus the novice investor who just says, hey, let's tweak the spreadsheet, and it only goes up. So when looking at spreadsheets or kind of just where we are in the market, what are some things that you do to give a heat check, whether it be the underwriting, looking at markets, what have you?
Very much right now, property taxes and insurance are like two of the big things that have creeped up lately, in that insurance has just gotten more and more expensive. And every time I think I have a new reasonable rule of thumb, we get a quote and I'm like, oh, I got to move my rule of thumb up. So, you know, in our market here, Central Eastern Tennessee, it depends on class. It depends on a lot of things. But if my rule of thumb 2 years ago was, you know, $300 per unit for insurance, it went up. And now it's like $450. So if anybody hasn't underwritten for a while or quoted insurance, that's been a big one lately.
Not in a flood zone or anything?
No, not in a flood zone. This is just straight up regular insurance.
What has been the biggest, have they said the biggest driver? Is it claims, the natural disaster stuff? Being in the East Tennessee, and Greg is in East Tennessee market, just to give some more color on that. But is it just, and costs have gone up? Or I know we've used the insurance as very, very low comparative, but
it was replacement costs.
Oh, right.
Just tied to labor and materials. So both have gone up, specifically materials. They've gone up, they've come down a little bit. So it could be somewhat transitory. And that was the advice that I got, was to don't sit on any insurance that you've quoted lately. Make sure you're re-engaging with your insurance people in a year, because hopefully materials costs would come down and therefore your replacement costs would come down, and therefore hopefully your premium can be adjusted as well. So you should never do it anyway. Get your insurance and then just let the expense creep effect by just signing every new, you know, renewal that you receive.
That is one thing Greg and even Jake have really just hammered home of, just here's the price that we paid. Why did it go up? And just really understanding that quote, because it's in the world that we're in, there's so many things going on that it's letting it at slide. And as an operator, it's just a true testament to you and obviously the team around us of who we surround ourselves, to make sure that we're performing world-class and not letting that expense creep hit us really hard and affect the profitability of the property.
Yeah. And like specifically on a property we're in the process of purchasing now, we had a bunch of quotes, went through a broker. We had quotes from the same provider, you know, the same insurance company with two dramatically different premiums. And I'm like, well, this is all ABC insurance company. So of course we built the spreadsheet and broke every little thing out to figure out where the discrepancy was. So not only was it in the replacement costs, but specifically the bid was just poorly done, because their square footages were dramatically off. And with the square footages being dramatically off on the low side, they were coming in with a very competitive quote that was impossible to achieve, because ultimately that would have come back around. They would have done their final underwriting and seen that their square footages was off. And if you underwrote to this great quote that is somehow a unicorn compared to all the others, you know, we would have gotten burned. It was, you know, it would move the needle significantly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you actually have to. And the the reason I got back was because they pulled the information off of Zillow or something like that. And sometimes they're wrong. And I'm like, why don't you just ask me for the information and I'd be happy to provide it to you.
You know, so, I mean, I think it's those insurance quotes is just trying to go as fast as possible and not be have any bottlenecks. So I think it's, I mean, that's I'm sure it happens in all lines of business. So we're just picking out insurance. Where, what else do you kind of look to poke holes in underwriting or markets or just kind of what you've seen in the market today? You mentioned property tax. What's been the biggest thing that you've seen with property taxes?
Just making sure that they're being reassessed for whatever mode that the county / city assesses them in. So that can be very market specific. Around here, it's every 4 or 5 years. In Virginia, they actually do it at fair market value instead of an assessed value. So you just got to know what you're paying and when it'll adjust. Because if you're underwriting for a very long hold and your property tax calendar says you're going to be reassessed in, you know, year 3 or year 4, you have to go into the P&L and theoretically, you know, hard code a different number in because it is no longer going to track with your regular 3% or 2 or whatever it is, 2 or 3% expense accelerator. I mean, so there's some things that you have to go in and manipulate manually based on real-time changes. And that one, I think, can be overlooked a lot.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's the sophistication of investors shows that, because if you just said, hey, I'm doubling taxes, well, versus a well-thought-out explained answer like Greg's of, hey, actually, it changes every 4 years. Here's the new valuation. And, you know, really laying out that formula. It's I always use property taxes. How did you calculate it? Because that's the savvy investor explaining not just the dollar amounts, but when that dollar amount should make an impact, which is always super important, because that's the underwriting I personally like a lot more, is just that very great. And that's what you have to be when you're an investor in this business, especially if you're taking money from other people, is being that savvy investor and going through line by line.
Yeah. And that's that. And it's extremely market specific. So, you know, if you're more on the page of investing with other people and their projects, that's a great question they ask. And anything short of we went and sat down with the assessor at the tax office, you know, ask a few more questions to make sure that you're satisfied, because that's a big one. I mean, that can ruin your lunch in a hurry.
And you can't, and that's a number you can't change.
That's a number you can't change. Exactly. You just can't go bid it. I mean, yes, there's ways you can hire people to argue your property tax for you and things like that. But ultimately, that one is well out of, you know, your control.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things you'd have to do to factor that in and win. And I'd rather be prepared for the worst case scenario.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So that's Greg, the thing, like the worst case scenario, Mike, you get me started on that one is, you know,
you might not get a deal. And you and I think both struggle from that from time to time. It's like we look at the worst case or like what all the worst case happens at once. Like, wow, this is a really terrible deal. And we're like, well, I think a lot has to go. It's the layers of probability of like, what are the probability of all these things could go wrong?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a good sensitivities analysis of some kind. So, I mean, I joke about it with people. I probably have joked about it with you. It's like we're projecting a 14.72 IRR. Why isn't it 14.73 or 14.71? It's because you just you did your due diligence and you created a model that has a bunch of inputs and it spits out one scenario. And, you know, ultimately that it's going to hit on what is that 0.79 to the 100th? Is that to the 1,000th? I can't remember. 100th. You know, it's very unlikely. And that's just, you know, one of the things that spins around in my head is sometimes I feel like the underwriting is so specific that it gives it an unnecessarily...
it's a black and white in the grand scheme.
It's black and white, and it makes it seem like it's somehow more possible, you know, that it has that level of granularity can give the impression that you know more than you really do. Because there's somebody asked me, we were talking about some underwriting. He's like, is there any reason why we wouldn't be able to hit this projection? And I'm like, I can think of a million reasons why we wouldn't be able to. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it was a partner. So we're, you know, got a little more candid. And I'm like, yeah, there's all kinds of reasons why this won't work. You know, there's more reasons why this won't work than there are that it will, for sure. So
interest rates go up 2%.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know.
That's the thing too, though. I think I read this online, is that your underwriting, obviously it has to make sense. And I don't want to come across as like you don't have to underwrite, because it's not true. But your underwriting, like high level, like you should be able to see like the story behind the deal of, hey, they're $200 below market. There's ability to increase other income. Their expenses are too high. All these things, like high level, like you can't, like you said, measure an IRR. Like you can measure the IRR, but in the realm of like a good deal, to be very story oriented. And I know in my investing career that I was very like to the T, it had to hit these things. But it's like, when you go to the on site, is it in a good area? Do we believe we can increase rents? Do we believe in the market fundamentals of this entire market and submarket? And it checks the boxes on the properties and the business plan. It seems like a good deal, so go for it. I'm not saying, now this is, I'm going to caveat and disclaim that this isn't just go all in and don't underwrite stuff because it looks pretty. But when you've been underwritten so many times, time and time again, you start to kind of know what a good deal looks like by just like appearances and developments in that area.
Oh yeah. Especially when you're, you know, rinse and repeating in a market, then your comfort level gets much better. I, you know, certainly don't get complacent or anything, but it does become easier to underwrite because you know, the market fundamentals much better. So I'm certainly not discounting the need to underwrite in any way. Because that gives you the path, but even, you know, any road, you know, there's lines on it and you can go over the white line a little bit and still be on the hard surface and be pretty good shape, but you're not quite into the weeds.
I get what you're saying with that.
You know, it's like, I mean, yeah. Defensible underwriting has come up a lot. I've heard people talk about that more instead of just having conservative underwriting, having defensible underwriting, which, what's that?
It's always a buzzword because everyone's.
I like the defensible. I think that is.
I like that too, because then what is conservative? Like?
Exactly. What's conservative? Yeah. It's so if you're saying, you know, your rent increase is going to be this and you can back it up with something very market specific instead of a CoStar report that says rents are going up, you know, 17% nationally. I'm like, I don't care what that CoStar report says, unless it's talking about, you know, the block that I'm buying a property on. I mean, so, you know, some of that stuff is informative, but you can't really apply it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's huge. And I think your skill set is in the operations piece of just understanding, you know, our underwriting is here, our ops is here. We have to build this bridge. And I think you do a very good job of poking those holes, property manager says, in the OM and all that other good stuff. Like all the noise, you're very good at, all right, well, we need to get to this bridge. How do we get there? So what are some things that you've noticed? Because you use third party. For some of your deals, like what are some things that you poke holes into their operations when doing a deal or looking at it to make sure it's running efficiently?
Most of what we've seen has been time. It's the time factor with third-party management that we've been most frustrated with, just things happening as quickly as we would like them to be, and systems and processes. And that's not something that is very easily, you know, to go into somebody's business and say, we would like these systems and processes implemented, is just not realistic when you might own 3% of their units under management or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's as much as possible, you know, the squeaky wheel type thing. If they know you're paying attention, they'll pay more attention to you, and setting those expectations, things like marketing. You know, we've done a lot of marketing side by side with our third party managers just to make sure that they're getting a full funnel of leads.
Yeah. When working with third party, how have you found the line to keep them honest with that time aspect? Because it's super hard to do that, because you're not, I mean, you're more located in the backyard, but still you can't be there all the time. So I guess, how do you keep them accountable when it comes to that? Is it pictures, how do you keep them accountable for that?
It's just pictures and, setting expectations, let you know that this unit is coming open on this date. And have they done a pre-inspection to assess the level of rehab? So that kind of stuff, when you're able to pay attention to, kind of in real time, what is going on at your property, then, you cross that line from being somebody that just waits for their check to arrive and somebody that's, really trying to run a business. So it's just being active. You do mostly weekly calls, either with the property manager directly or as a team, where we have plenty of access to all of the third-party management stuff. So we're less relying on them to get information. We just go in and get it, assess it ourselves, and then engage them with, hey, here's what we think we need to go with this. To some extent, the time thing very lately has been labor-related, which is probably not the fault of necessarily a property manager or anybody. Everybody's kind of fighting that. So I will give them, kudos in that it can be extremely helpful if you do have a property manager that has maintenance crews and stuff in-house. You may be doing better compared to the rest of the market, or a smaller manager that doesn't have a bunch of resources. So it's all a big trade-offs conversation is what I think it comes down to, is what is the trade-off of paying a little bit more and not having to hire people versus having very granular control over systems and processes and having to do some of this stuff yourself,
Naval Ravikant has a quote. He goes, I want to work with vendors where I'm the number one customer. And that's to your point, is you want to work for the property manager that only has you as a client, or do you want to be kind of a smaller fish? And there is costs and benefits, because it's like you get the cheaper discounts with the bigger stuff, but you're paying time aspect for it. So there's very nuanced ways in which, you can think about it. But I think a lot of company or groups think right out of the gates are doing self-management. And so it takes a lot of work for that, because I think a lot of people think, oh, I'll get a deal and then I'll grow it. But it has to grow simultaneously, because it's, if the investing side is constantly buying deals and the management company is still stuck here, it doesn't matter how well you buy them. All the properties you purchase are going to suffer. And so I think it's a super important understanding that. And if you're looking to self-manage, just realizing that it's a slower path, but there is no wrong path in that as well.
Yeah. And we are doing that on our next two acquisitions. We're bringing management.
I didn't know if it was a secret.
No, it's not a secret.
So what have you done? I mean, what's been your biggest learning lesson in starting a property management company?
There's a ton to it. I'm part of another education platform that is extremely property management centric. So I'm grateful for that, having the systems, the processes, all the documentation. I got my real estate license, not because I needed to, but there's an element of, the 7 protected classes. There's a lot of legal stuff that you have to know. So it's not as easy as just getting on Rent Cafe and, opening up property management company. There's a lot of this business, there's a lot to it day to day when you're on point being responsible for it. Yeah.
I think everyone can agree that property management is easily the hardest part when it comes to residents, maintenance, vendors. You're the running the circuits, if you will. Well, also.
Yeah. And, two or three years in having used third-party management. So I think that's extremely useful, having done asset management, basically managing other managers. It's a good logical step for us for our growth as a business to take it on now, because I didn't want to take it on out of the gate, because I just felt there was learning how to run and buy these businesses and do the property management side of it. I just felt it was too much.
Well, it's hedging your downside risk of if I use third, I would be solely responsible for this investment not going well if I was managing it, versus if I have someone who has experience. I know it reduces my risk of failure exponentially. And now because you've done the marketing, you've pretty much side by side building systems, I think you're in a much stronger point to do that moving forward.
It's going to be great.
I look forward to seeing in a year from now, we catching up and we're like, oh my gosh, This is the greatest or scariest thing I've ever done in my life, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, we got a good team, you know, and this is all we do now. So
yeah, take over the world.
Yeah, yeah. East Tennessee, at least. There's some competition down in Knoxville area I heard about.
You know, who might say? But Greg, as we kind of unwind towards the end of the show, I ask investors or one pro tip. I'm just curious, what is your one investor pro tip for our listeners?
It's just kind of sticking with the underwriting. This is something that our team and some of the other people that I underwrite with have implemented. Is we talked about it before we started recording, is doing stuff separately and then aggregating the results. So if we're looking at a deal and we have an OM, we're like, hey, this came across my email, kind of interesting. It's a market we're interested in. We'll underwrite it separately. And then we'll come back and see if we're coming up with similar answers, because we want to get away from the tendency to, you know, give anybody some unintentional biases by going too rah-rah. Or even the opposite is like, you know, some people will see opportunity where I might miss it. So yeah, just
a confirmation bias.
Yeah. Confirmation bias is a big thing you got to watch out for. Is, yeah. Find rent comps until they're all the same and in favor of your deal. You know, that's,
I think to Greg's point, it's aggregating as much data in
exactly
so that you can see your baselines, not just in underwriting, but baselines for rents, baselines and operations, baselines and quotes with vendors. The more data you have, the better it is. And I think few people think that way. And I think that's just a very powerful way to think. If you can process it and have an X result that, you know, it's like a bell curve, the 80-20, it's, you know, you got your 20% on the outliers and then your middle. But I think it's as you grow in scale, you're thinking of those things to help become a more efficient and profitable operator, because in the end it's about that NOI. So it's how can we do those risk-adjusted returns to the highest by doing the most efficient things.
Yeah, and just, I mean, we joke about me being a pessimist, or I don't know what we call, yeah, but it's just going in and trying to.
I never put labels on you.
Yeah, bro. Not let's pessimist. Get that on the top. Just like I'm habitually like a devil's advocate type approach to things, you know, even things that I'm completely in favor of and excited about. You know, you got to beat it up. You know, we have that. Here's my underwriting, Mike. You know, tell me what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
You know, and I genuinely want to know is like, wreck this.
Yeah.
You know, don't just say, oh, looks good. That's the worst answer you can get in an email.
Yeah. And I
think maybe not the worst answer, but you know, it's
yeah, like, I think, but that's true. Is
this took me 20 hours and yeah, it looks great. I'm like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to be the stick in the mud, but you also have to be, what am I missing? Like,
yeah, exactly. What am I missing? Yeah.
So no, I think that's powerful. And I think a lot of investors will get that, because I know for me, it's, I always feel like the negative Nancy, even in our calls where I'm like, can we bump rents $30 on the renewal instead of, because everyone's like, nah, we're hitting this all day. Perfect. We're like, how about we get $30 more? 50? 30? Like what? How much more can we get that bump to really make it that much more profitable? And I think it's just having that hat of like, what am I doing the best for our investors and our team is all in all, it's contributing to them. So it's the framework that I've, it helps me process through it. So Greg, if anyone wanted to reach out to you, if they have any questions or wanted to get their underwriting wrecked, where can investors or and listeners and investors
reach you? Yeah, we are Real Wealth Solutions. So that's Darren Light. I might have heard of him. Pretty good guy.
I hope so. He's partner. Yeah,
no.
Even if you're a partner with Greg, pretty good guy.
And my wife, Kim. So we make up Real Wealth Solutions, and best place to find us is at realwealth.solutions. Yeah, we have our own little podcast going and very active with meetups in East Tennessee as well. So yeah, we're around, we're available, love to talk to you. Genuine invitation to shoot us an email, all the contact information is there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get that in the show notes, and appreciate it, Greg. And if anyone has any questions for me, reach out to me at miket@ranciri.com. And until then, we'll see you next week.